The IAB Australia podcast, digital advertising leaders and the issues that matter.
How do we make it simple?
Try to stop a lot of the buzzwords.
A chance to change the way a whole industry works.
For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.
Welcome to the IAB Australia podcast. My name is Gayla Roy, CEO of the IAB. Today we're going to be talking about diversity in media buying and how we can as an industry think about diversifying our inventory, diversifying our decisions, and really making sure we've got a rich mix of media options available as advertisers. So to join me for this conversation, I've got two fantastic guests. I've got Nicole Pryor, who's MD of Australia and New Zealand for Xandr. Welcome, Nicole.
Hey, Gay. How are you?
Yeah, good. And Anna Dancy, who's the National Sales Manager for NITV. Hi, Anna.
Thanks, Gay. So great to be here.
Awesome. So we're finding out a little bit more about the people who work in our industry and how they got into the industry and why they stay, which hopefully you can enlighten us on your own journeys. Nicole, how did you get into media?
Oh, look, it was a very long time ago, I must say. I've been in the industry now for over 24 years. I started my media career as a sales assistant at Network 10, and that was sort of really late 90s. So it was at a time where it was, you know, as it still is, you know, a lot of fun and a great industry to work in. I was very fortunate to then move along to Channel 7 and then expand my knowledge and I guess passion for the industry and move over to media agency side, where I've spent quite a lot of time, you know, over 6 years working at Group M. I've worked at UM and now currently I'm over at Xandr running a tech platform, which is, you know, I know this sounds quite cringeworthy, but I, you know, say this to a lot of people, I've literally landed in my dream role. So, yeah, it's quite a diverse background, but I think everything that I've done has led me to where I am today.
Yeah, fantastic. And I guess getting under the hood of why did you join a TV network? Was it something you dreamed of doing during school or uni, or?
I just saw the ad in the paper and I was, it was that simple. I was a receptionist for a university and, I saw the ad in the paper and, you know, I watched Channel 10. It was Melrose Place and, you know, days like that, The Simpsons, where, you know, TV was kind of, you know, and it still is, you know, really exciting. Exciting place. So I applied for the job and it was not by design, but have never looked back.
But that brand jumped out at you, obviously. So
absolutely.
Fantastic. Yeah. How about you, Anna?
Actually, it's very funny. It's a little bit similar, but I fell into media. It was just dumb luck, really. I was studying at the time, but very typical, if anyone's got an ethnic mother, I was kind of pushed into studying at university, probably a bit before I was ready to. So I was doing a dual degree. I was doing law and government, politics, international relations, and just not loving it. And then so mum said, you know, you've got to get a job. So I went to a recruitment agency. They lined me up. I was actually a receptionist. So they were trialing this admin role in APN newspapers, so regional press in Brisbane. And that's how I got my foot in the door. And really what I was doing with the teams was I'd put my hand up to do jobs. I'd say, can I help with anything? Do you want to teach me how to do some of these things? And I think I had a natural personality for sales. And so the sales team scooped me up. And then from there, the kind of like Nicole, I went to Network 10, which at the time merged with Foxtel. So I was part of the MCN buying house. Then I moved over to Channel 7. I did my typical 2-year stint in the UK where I worked for Starcom. So trying to get a bit of cross experience in the agency. And then I also came back. Worked for Channel 7, went to SBS. So I've done my rounds except for Network 9. And left SBS to take a role at LinkedIn, which was exciting for me to, again, expand my skill set, work for a tech platform, get into that digital space. And then the opportunity at NITV came up, which I'll mirror Nicole's sentiment. And I do feel like this is one of the most important job I'll probably ever do, but definitely something that's aligned with my passion and purpose. So I love coming to work every day, and I feel really fortunate to have the conversations I do day in, day out.
I love that. You have, you've done the broadcasters, Channel 9. You'll get a call from them straight after this airs, I'm sure. Anna, you and I caught up probably, a couple of years ago, almost just as COVID was hitting, talking about some of the work that you were doing, trying to get more investment into Indigenous media. And obviously media diversity is a passion of yours. What does diversity in media planning mean to you? What's the big picture there?
Yeah. You know, there's a very literal way in terms of including platforms and media companies in plans. That's the end goal, is kind of having that investment. But it's about considering audiences outside of the traditional ecosystems. Whilst there'll always be places for your big audience reach buys, platforms like YouTube and Facebook, or the big networks, it's also having a strategic framework of how to include diverse platforms, which is important in order to reach all Australians. So in practice, it looks like ongoing education on the value these audiences bring that needs to be understood from clients and agency teams alike.
And presumably creative agencies as well. Often there'll be
definitely
a different relationship there. And you obviously did the rounds, and you are a great salesperson, because I think you met with everyone in the industry when a couple of years ago. In terms of the reception in market to getting people thinking about diverse investment, was it harder or easier than you thought it would be, those conversations?
Easier than I thought it would be. There was a real groundswell movement and support for what we were talking about. And I just think it hadn't been done before. So to go to market and say, we've got this great initiative called Beyond 3%, and what we're trying to achieve is actually, it's born from the idea that 3.3% of our population is Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. Yet when we looked at SMI data, it was found that actually 0.03% of advertising dollars actually went towards platforms that, service these communities specifically. And really what's important about that is diversity within the Australian landscape and telling those stories, but telling those stories from our perspective, from a Black perspective, which we're really proud to do. It's a virtuous cycle in that that investment allows us to invest into the Indigenous production sector, which creates more jobs, which then we're able to tell more stories, which everyone wins in that case.
Yeah, awesome. So people were receptive.
Yeah.
Did spend move, and did that spend stay?
It has been. It's been very, very, good to see that it wasn't just conversations happening. Obviously, agencies and brands will always be at different stages in their diversity planning and framework, but it was great to see brands like Coles, for example, come on board straight away to Beyond 3%. We had great support from OMG Group, where they went to their clients and took the offering and said, how can we as a collective really get behind this, and who's going to sign up? So it has been a very good year, and it continues to be. They keep putting, my targets up, but it definitely has resulted in increased investment that's also renewing year on year.
So it must be working. So Nicole, from your point of view, what responsibility, and responsibility may not be the right word, but what responsibility do brands have to address diverse audiences, both from a business point of view and a societal point of view?
Oh, look, I think brands play a pivotal role in this. You know, it's really important for them. And I think there's, you know, Anna touched on this, there's really two key areas to consider when you talk about a diverse media ecosystem for brands. And one is the diversity of publisher selection. And secondly, to your point, is the diversity around audience and potential customers. And one's not necessarily exclusive of the other. You know, over the years, we've seen a trend of investment going to the big tech giants. And while this may seem efficient and scalable for brands, it is at the cost of the local publishing and ecosystem. And as a result, isn't delivering on a diverse media plan or an audience for advertisers or brands. I think what is interesting is we've definitely started to see a change. And Anna, you know, touched on this as, you know, a year or so ago, IPG and recently Group M really called out how they're paying particular attention to this. You know, IPG launched their media responsibility principles, and that was really developed to ensure that brands had a choice and could review publishers across an array of responsibilities beyond just brand safe environments. You know, for example, data collection and its use. Was the collection and use of that data in a way that was ethical? Is the media plan diverse and representative? Like, are the media partners that we're getting on board, what they were getting on board, demonstrate they celebrate all forms of diversity? You know, children and wellbeing and transparency. I think what's great and what I really love what Anna is talking about and doing is it's about education as well. You know, you look back even 3 or 4 years ago, what Boomtown as an industry board did for the education of just regional Australia. And a lot of it, I think, is about, you know, the education and the importance of the role that brands play in supporting an ecosystem, a healthy ecosystem, but also, you know, a diverse audience that, you know, essentially is going to drive brand growth and, you know, reach more consumers for them.
Yeah, and if you're a smart brand and other people aren't there, right, you get in amongst it and you gain market share immediately.
It's That's not right. often you'll share find a voice. Clear space. Yeah.
And Nicole, I guess you've talked a little bit how the agencies are looking at the world there. What role does advertising technology play in that? How can we help make that easier?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, as we all know, we've got an extremely fragmented ecosystem, and it means, you know, defining and executing a diverse media plan can be challenging and time consuming. You know, marketers want scalability. We want to be able to create a media plan that reflects the audience but delivers on efficiency. We want it to be brand safe, you know. So there's a lot of different aspects to consider. So, I mean, if brands traditionally wanted to support, say, you know, 10 minority publishers, they would have to cultivate 10 separate relationships to realise the campaigns, which, you know, can be time consuming and difficult. Now what we have, I guess, is the opportunity with curated marketplaces where niche players are brought together, becoming instantly scalable via technology and bought from a single ID. And that means that brands are able to buy scaled audiences, enriched with data that makes sense and make sure that they are, you know, they're fit for purpose and deliver on the brand metrics. And it means that it becomes a lot easier to transact and execute on a diverse media buy opposed to traditionally, as I said, you know, having to source out multiple different publishers.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, you know, old school vertical ad networks, right? It's
That's right. Well, technology becomes the enabler now for that to become far more easy and scalable. You know, that's the most important thing, is that we don't want to, you know, consider or think about diverse media plans as just being niche. They are scalable and they are very attainable to do in a smooth transaction.
And Anna, from your point of view, so what opportunity or how do curated marketplaces fit in with the work that you're doing?
So we take part in curated marketplaces where appropriate for our clients and for the channel. For example, NITV, we're very, very open to it for those exact reasons, Nicole. Obviously, making a clients' job of buying easier is really important to us. Programmatic does have a reputation of being complicated and fragmented, and we really see curated marketplaces as helping to fix these issues. So most definitely, we want to be part of that mix, and it does really help shine a light, like you said, on advertisers and platforms that may not get a look in because they're being outshone from those bigger platforms.
Yeah, and there's probably a natural alignment with the sort of brands that are looking for that opportunity as well. So it would help you find those right partners in the mix.
Yeah.
And Nicole, curated marketplaces, you know, they, I mean, there's different types of curated marketplaces, obviously, but for these sort of, and niche sounds, I don't know if it's the right word at all. Like I find, you know, but for audiences that may be outside the normal mix, advertisers starting to use them? So we've heard how easy they are. Are they being accessed?
Yeah, absolutely, Gay. I'd say that, you know, I mean, I can only speak firsthand from us at Xandr. It is the, you know, fastest growing area of our business. It's something that also really appeals, as Anna said, to publishers as well, because it gives them the ability to also ensure that their inventory is represented and traded in the right way with the right brands as well. And I certainly see that it will continue to grow. It gives the buyer and or the brand greater control and transparency of where their spend is going. And it makes the transaction process seamless. I certainly think that we will start to see more and more of this in the future. You know, brands we're starting to see can have better control and visibility of the working media and the ROI that it's delivering, especially when they're overlaying their first party audiences as well. So you can really start to, for a brand, understand for either whether it's, you know, different products or different messages, what that designed inventory composition looks like and easily executed. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and it's we did a bit of work a couple of years ago at the IAB on sort of niche and small publishers and trying to get them thinking about different commercial options. And to Anna's point, programmatic can be quite daunting. So finding ways of them being able to group with other publishers that gives them enough scale to make it worthwhile is, you know, it's fantastic for publishers who are really struggling to find out what, you know, find what that next revenue model looks like. So that's fantastic. So obviously, audience is one lens when people are buying inventory that's in place. There are a lot of other hoops that media buyers and agencies make us jump through, whether it be brand safety, viewability, all the mix of, I guess, quality and hygiene metrics that go into play. How does the curated marketplaces, I guess I'll start with you, Nicole, in terms of that quality piece, are the same standards coming into place? Is it a trade-off in any way?
Look, it's absolutely the same standards. I mean, measurement and transparency go hand in hand, and they'll play a critical role in establishing trust with any brand and any publisher and any piece of inventory. I think that technology specifically allows marketers to measure their plan's performance in a way that is more effective. And they're using a lot more than, as you know, just CPMs as the core performance indicator. Having greater visibility and control therefore leads into greater transparency and ensuring that those quality metrics and measures are put into place. So, you know, we're certainly seeing that, you know, the advertisers are starting to realise, you know, the role that they play in keeping the internet diverse, open and free, and it lends more to the discussion on transparency than it ever has before. You know, I think transparency coming down to knowing where their budgets are going and supporting a diverse ecosystem is something that brands are certainly talking a lot more about.
And Anna, is this top of mind for you, all the discussions around brand safety and viewability, et cetera?
Definitely. Yeah. And when it comes to these marketplaces, it's really about prioritising privacy over scale and making sure that we are getting that right. And really, we need to rebuild the infrastructure for a more responsible web. So we need to start looking at technologies that have been naturally built for consent and privacy and transparency, which is what we're doing.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, right? Because yes, we absolutely, that has to be front and center. But for some of these, some smaller audiences or different pockets of audiences that we're looking for, trying to find a way of, and I guess this is Nicole's thing, that has, Nicole has to solve this, but making sure we're understanding what that extra reach is, you know, how we pull these pieces together, which is getting harder and harder to understand that campaign reach of all our different pockets. Have you solved for that yet, Nicole? Have you solved the whole measurement issue across the web?
Absolutely.
Awesome. That was done.
Done. Tick. Oh, look, at, you know, as you know, it's an ongoing feast, and there's multiple moving parts. But I think, you know, like yourselves, many industry bodies are coming together to find what that holy grail is and what's important to clients as well. You know, so being able to, you know, I think, measure more on effectiveness in a fair and equal manner is something that is certainly being talked about more and more.
Awesome. Well, I'd love to challenge you both to share a fantastic diverse media plan ROI measurement piece at our big conference Measure Up. I think that'd be great to really showcase how a brand can really get ahead of the others by implementing curated marketplaces. So I'll leave that with you as well, Nicole.
Great. Fabulous. I look forward to that challenge.
If you both thought, I guess, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years out, we've got people thinking about diversity, responsibility, and their own business opportunities, what does a diverse media landscape, I guess, from both a content but also an advertising point of view look like? What's I won't say nirvana, but what does good look like in a few years' time?
Yeah, I think one, we get to a point where we actually don't need to talk about it anymore because it's the norm. I think that's the ultimate nirvana. And really what that looks like is that the diversity of media is reflective of the diversity of this country. I think that's probably, you know, a really good, easy benchmark to challenge ourselves to get to, and whether that's the diversity within the actual advertising from a creative point of view, to the platforms, to the audiences that we're targeting, it's a very holistic look on every single client's media buy.
And to your point, that sort of, I guess, you know, it becoming the norm, and sometimes, as we know, in any battle, if we want to word it that way, a bit of overcorrection to begin with. So it doesn't hurt. So I'm sure that might help your budget, just a bit of overcorrection, and then we come back to representation. So it's challenge brands to do that. Nicole, how about for you? What would you like to see different in a few years?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to top Anna's response there. I have to say I'm 100% aligned, you know, to not have to it be such a big conversation and thought process. I think when you look at the Holy Grail, it's advertisers bringing in these metric as part of their company core KPIs, right, because that's where it will start, where people are actually, you know, looking at how am I making an impact on the ecosystem, or how am I making an impact into society? How am I protecting society through the right use of data and privacy and, you know, transparent fees across the supply chain? So I think when all of these things coupled or combined together, that's what makes a diverse, transparent, brand safe ecosystem for us all. So I think that, you know, companies being KPI'd on it and metrics being bought in on it, we'll start to see that. And some already are. So that's why, you know, I'm quite excited that, you know, some organizations are already using this as part of their performance metrics on, you know, it's not just am I raising brand awareness by 10%. You know, there are other core metrics around, you know, diversity and transparency and data protection that form it. So I think that's when we'll start to see more and more brands jump on board and have this as the norm.
And it's a good time for our industry. We're resetting everything else. So if I think about, you know, Nicole, to the points that you brought up, you know, that's only going to make a more trusted and, you know, a place where advertisers have confidence. We've got the sustainability discussion. So there's a whole lot of areas. So we almost can tell, you know, agencies and marketers to not rip up their scorecards, but there's definitely an opportunity here as we lose signals, as we change privacy reform, to sort of start from the place we'd like to be. So
agree, yeah.
Great to see advertisers thinking that way. We're getting a lovely amount of dog action in the podcast today. We've got a couple of dogs in the background, which is delightful while we're still working from home. Anna, I'm a huge SBS watcher. I'd love to know, let's hear a bit about our programming, the actual stuff that all this advertising supports. What's going on in terms of audiences and programming this year? Any surprises for you?
So it's going really well with the increase of revenue from the Beyond 3% initiative. It means that we're able to commission and acquire more content from the Indigenous production sector. So we refreshed our brand and schedules at the end of last year. And alongside our Indigenous content strategy, we're actually reaching more audiences than ever before. So we have some really exciting pieces about to drop during NAIDOC, actually. The one I'm most looking forward to is called Off Country. And this follows the lives of 7 Indigenous students as they leave home to spend a year boarding at one of the most, I think, elite boarding schools in the country, which is Geelong Grammar School. But they really go on the journey and they wrestle with their conflicting identities as students moving between boarding life and home life. And it creates this really almost a historic record of one of Australia's key Indigenous education pathways and paints a complex portrait of what it means to be an Indigenous child in Australia today. So these are the kinds of stories that we're able to explore and able to tell on our screens, which, you know, is so important for us and so interesting, I think, to look at our culture in these different ways.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. And it sort of ties into us as an industry as well. So a lot of discussion around getting a more diverse workplace, but making sure that the support and the energy is there when we're onboarding people and making sure that sometimes different thinking, which we want in the industry, is heard and, you know, respected and given a chance to shine. So I'll be watching that for sure. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. That was a really uplifting conversation. I'm hoping we'll hear more and more about it. And as a measurement person by background, we'll get you back in a year and see what's changed. Nicole, you can tell us how curated marketplaces are going and maybe in pockets of different niche audiences you'd never even thought about. I'd love to hear about some, you know, quirky, wild niches that, you know, that sounds a bit risque, but some different groups that, you know, maybe access for the first time in by bigger brands. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Love
today.
To.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gay. It's great to be here.
Thanks for hosting. Thanks.
The IAB Australia podcast, digital advertising leaders and the issues that matter. For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.